Born in the grip of oppression, I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. But when I'm attacked, I protect and defend. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Karen Schoen with the Prism of America's Education. And when I first started compiling this information and started talking about and understanding what was really going on in America, we had multiple events. And at one of the events, I met a wonderful man who has become a friend, and his name is Steve Gronka. He has created a program for children that I thought was absolutely amazing, especially for anyone that is homeschooling now. You can participate through a group, you can participate through a school environment, or it does not matter. And what this program does, it allows the kids to think outside the box, and that is so missing in our school environment. So Steve Gronka, thank you for joining me today. And can you tell everyone about Sequest Kids, because this is so incredible.
Sure, Karen. Thanks for having me on the show again. And Sequest Kids is basically set up to be Little League for boating. Now, we started in 1989, so just over 30 years ago. Started as an education foundation, trying to do something to improve education here in America and worldwide if possible. And also establishing a problem-solving concept to go along with that, which is called optimization through total environmental awareness. And not an environmental concept per se, but it is a problem-solving system where basically for people to have the best life that they possibly can, they need to solve all problems for the best solutions that they can possibly get. Now, in the sciences and business, there are specific ways of going about doing that. But we wanted to have a activity for children which would help them to realize the prospects of being motivated in education and how that could serve them to solve problems in the best way and then ultimately have the best life that they possibly can. And when you ask people, no matter what background they come from, everyone wants to have the best life that they possibly can. So our activity for the kids was developed around boat building. And in the program, in 2 days or less, kids from 4 years old through college age, including all special needs, build a 10-foot boat, paddles, oars, mast, sail, sail rig, and outboard motor bracket, get boating safety trained, and become part of an international group of kids that have all built their own boats. So Sequest Kids operates not only nationally, but we have been overseas. We've been in all parts of the UK, England, Ireland, Scotland, and Wales, France, Denmark, and Germany. And
wow.
Also Canada, since they're our neighbors to the north.
That is really phenomenal, Steve. And just the idea that the kids will be able to think is an amazing thing in itself. And as a teacher, I can't believe I'm saying that. But our children are being taught what to think. They're not being taught how to think. And this program absolutely gets them onto the track of becoming a critical thinker. Steve, it is through your connection internationally that I believe is when you met Valerie and discovered what I feel is one of the biggest travesties that we have in America today. And it is an untold, put in the drawer, nobody talks about it, and that is trafficking and the trafficking of our children. So would you please explain to everyone how you met Valerie and how that relationship started?
Surprisingly enough, the international component of this whole thing involves a pastor from Haiti, Pastor Daniel Ulysses, who at one time was the chaplain for the Harbor Police in New York City. He was really interested in trying to bring Sequest kids to Haiti. This was about, oh boy, maybe 15 years ago that we met. Stayed in touch through the years. Daniel asked me to come to Washington, D.C. with him 2 years ago to help him in regard to various things going on in Haiti revolving around trying to work with kids. The unfortunate circumstance of the trafficking of children, especially through orphanages. Also meeting us in Washington, D.C. was Valerie Dirksen, who has ICRIS, or pronounced ICRIS, the International Children's Rights Advocates Society. And for the last 2 years, I've been trying to work as closely as I can with Valerie to address the problem of trafficking in children, especially through the orphanages in Haiti. What we found, or what I found in the last 2 years, although Valerie is a little chagrined to have me say it, but from what I've seen, Valerie is probably the most trusted American to the Haitian people across the board, whether it's in law enforcement, politicians, whether against her or for her, and people that work in social services, and just the people of Haiti in general. No one has an impact on this whole issue of helping the children of Haiti more than Valerie does.
Valerie, what gave you the idea that going to Haiti was a place where you should start looking at trafficking? Is this an international problem, or is it just an American problem?
Well, first of all, thank you, Karen, for inviting me to speak about this subject, which is very near and dear to my heart. I stumbled upon this problem quite by accident. I was born in New York, raised in Europe. I went to school in Europe. I speak Dutch and German fluently, have a working knowledge of Spanish and French. I was introduced to an orphanage run by an American in Haiti through our church, through actually our pastor. And I was invited, I'm a three-time Paul Harris Fellow with Rotary, and I was invited to a planning meeting. Just simply, hey, would you like to come and learn about this? And this orphanage has a dance troupe that travels, has multiple tours a year for multiple months out of the year for these young men that reside at this home for boys. Of course, who's going to turn something like that down, right? And so I'm also a real estate broker in Atlanta. That day I was running around and taking care of all my business, thinking, you know, very focused on what I would be learning that evening about the orphanage and the orphans and how I could help. So I arrived at the door about the meeting was to start at 7. I arrived about 15 minutes early because in Germany, if you're 15 minutes early, you're already late. So I was kind of late for European standards. But anyway, I walk up to the door all ready to go. I'm greeted by the person sponsoring the meeting, and they said, well, didn't you hear? And I said, didn't I hear what? And they said there had been a terrible, devastating earthquake in Haiti. I said, no. I said, you know, I don't have any Haitian friends. I've never met a Haitian. Actually, all my travels all over Europe, I've been to many, many countries. I've never met a Haitian. So I said, well, I didn't have the news on that day or whatever. That person invited me in slowly and surely over the next 45 minutes to an hour. Everybody fashionably late starts waltzing in. The conversation turns to the devastation of this home for boys and the entire operation that this American who had been operating over, I think at the time, 25 years in Haiti, and that he was a former brother with the Missionaries of Charity under at the time Mother Teresa, now Saint Teresa. He was the first American brother with the Missionaries of Charities, and that he had donated his life to the poorest of the poor. What a noble cause. Right there, he had me, you know, this person that I had never met, true to form, I came prepared for the meeting. I was already thinking of venues, how we would do it. We would go to Coca-Cola and ask for some funding. And they quickly put me in charge of this tour. Okay, so I was the project lead on this, and we had quite a group of people that came together. And I think that first year, I think we did a fantastic job. I think everybody was very aware of the earthquake devastation and who's going to turn down orphans, right?
Absolutely. I have a question to ask you.
Okay.
I'd like everybody to remember back to that horrible day in 2010 when the earthquake hit Haiti. The American people did an amazing job, and they were able to give the Haitian people, they had donated over $2 billion. And I was involved in this, not collecting the money, but my company was going to build homes for the Haitians, and we were building hurricane-resistant, energy-efficient homes. What happened to that money is it went to the Clinton Foundation and never got to the Haitian people. And if you were not a Clinton-favored person, then what your proposal was in the garbage. So this all fits along with a lot of the things that we're going to be learning about Hillary Clinton in the future. The big question then becomes is where did that $2 billion really go? When you went down to Haiti, did you see results of that donation from the American people? Or is Haiti still as poor as it always was?
Okay, so first of all, I want to correct you. It wasn't $2 billion. It's north of $24 billion since the earthquake time. $24 billion. I was just there in March for 12 days, and it's the worst I've ever seen it. But what I want you to understand is, at this point, I had never been to Haiti. I didn't go down there. The tour came here to Georgia. I'm in Atlanta, Georgia. But I had not been. In fact, the first time I stepped foot in Haiti was in September of 2015. So again, getting back to this, I didn't know this level of hatred and nastiness existed in the world. I mean, evil exists for sure, and the devil is alive and well, and he's dancing, of course, but I had no idea what I was about to discover, being run through nonprofits and churches and so forth, all in the name of these children. You have to understand, I was unaware of all of this, right? I will tell you, my whole house quickly became Resurrection Dance Theater headquarters. I quickly became Mrs. Haiti. Everybody I talked to in my business, in Rotary, in school, my children's schools, in Girl Scouts, everything became, we need to help these orphans. Okay. So I quickly became the spokesperson. And I was being guided by the pastor at our church because he had been down there. He had a nonprofit that had supported this orphanage, a home for boys. Let's not call it an orphanage, because most of the children in Haiti are not orphans. In fact, they usually have at least one living parent. Just to throw out a statistic at you, of the 750 orphanages, only 35 are licensed, and it's a 3.27 unregulated business in Haiti. Most of them run by nonprofit 501c3s out of the United States. And what they're doing is they're essentially laundering money. They're trafficking in persons, which trafficking in persons could do with organs, could do with labor, and it can do with sex trafficking. So there's a lot to this, Karen, and I want to peel back the onion so that you have a good vision as to how I discovered all of this, right? That first year, the earthquake year, I'm drinking the Kool-Aid, I've taken the vaccination, and I only see rose-colored glasses how wonderful someone's donated their life to this. I never in a million years would have thought what was really happening at those orphanages. Never in a million years would I have ever thought what was happening. And so my daughter, my older daughter, when we finally, the big day came, they were introduced to this man who had donated his life. His name is Michael Geilenfeld. When we were finally introduced to him, my older daughter was very quiet. And she's not normally quiet. We were very excited. She's very much an extrovert. So it was kind of strange. I didn't know if she was overcome by, you know, the, starstruck. Was she starstruck? I didn't know until I got into the car. And we got into the car to drive home after meeting them and after the performance. And she said, "Mom, that man is evil." And I said, "What?" She said, "I don't know, Mother. Something about his eyes, he's just evil. There's something about him. I don't have a good feeling at all." And I said, "That is terrible. I can't believe you would say something like that. That man has donated his whole life to help the poorest of the poor in Haiti, orphans and abandoned children. I can't believe you would say that." She says, "Well, I'm just telling you." So we completed the tour. It was like 10 days. And we sent them on their way. Like I said, they travel a good 2 months with these kids multiple times of the year. So maybe 3, 4, 5 months of the year, they're traveling like rock stars. And my first question as a mother was, how do you keep up with the schoolwork? It must be unbelievable. And he introduced what was to become my older son. He introduced him as the tutor. And when he did that, his body language was like, "Oh, I'm the tutor now?" And it was kind of like not a joke. And he had this nervous laugh, ah, ha, 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 ha. You know, and I thought, that's strange. Again, hindsight's 20/20. I'm drinking Kool-Aid. So I didn't quite see it. But then when you reflect on things, there were several things that were really not right. Okay. So move ahead another year, 2011, they showed up in April. And everybody wanted to sit in my car because I let them listen to their music and they could talk freely and whatever. And everybody was asking me questions like, how do you get a scholarship? And how do you, is it hard? And so forth. And so I answered all the questions. I said, "Oh my goodness, someone like you, articulate, musical, athletic, you should have no problem." And it kind of contradicted what the message was to the audiences. The message was 100% of every dollar that's donated go to the quote unquote children of Haiti. So really? If it's going to the children of Haiti, then why is he having to pay for, he has to pay for his own school. And he was very nervous in telling me this.
Valerie, this is incredible information. And I'm going to ask everybody to hold that thought because we will be back again in a moment after the break.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Karen Schoen with the Prism of America's Education, and we are having a conversation with Steve Gronka from Sequest Kids and Valerie Dirks. And Valerie, where can people find you?
They can dial onto my website, www.icras8.com. They can call me on my cell phone. I will pick it up. Anybody who's willing to help. I've got these victims that need severe help, just welfare help.
As you're saying that, my mind is racing. I don't think people understand the magnitude of what this really is and how much, and I hate to say it, profitability there is in transporting and trafficking kids. So could you go over that again, Val?
Absolutely. So conservative estimates put the orphanage business, and I say it's business because they're exploiting children. They have at least, they're not really orphans because most of them are orphaned. I always say orphaned and abandoned, but the majority of them are abandoned because of the extreme poverty. So these people bring them in good faith to these orphanages run by people in North America who are collecting millions of dollars. They hand them over in the hopes that the child will have a better future than what they would have on, you know, of starvation means. So estimates put it at a $3.27 billion industry just in Haiti alone, and that's a conservative figure.
Just in Haiti?
Just in Haiti, yes, ma'am.
Oh,
yes, ma'am. It's a lot of money.
Worldwide, this must be almost $1 trillion. No wonder why.
Definitely. Definitely. And the trafficking estimates, trafficking experts put it at between $600 million and $1.2 billion. So, and trafficking has to do, of course, with labor, sex trafficking, and organ trafficking. And organ trafficking right now is a big problem in Haiti, especially amongst these homes, these orphanages.
Now, by organ trafficking, you mean that they're taking the child and removing an organ and then putting it on the market for sale. Is that correct?
That is correct. And the reason for that is most Haitians have O-positive blood, which is a very hardy blood, and their organs are very strong tissue because to transplant a kidney, for example, which there's a huge market for kidneys in North America, to transplant that and make it survive and viable, you know, you've got to have a hardy thing to begin with. So there's a lot of organ trafficking situations going on, and it's extremely profitable and lucrative. And the authorities are all very aware of this. And many in the government are actually shielding criminals from any type of prosecution.
When I went to one of the seminars that we had done, I met a man that was running for office as president in Haiti. And he said, when I asked him about the Clinton money and if they ever got any, he said, "You would be shocked if I told you that, yes, we did get some money. They built a hospital. But this hospital is not a normal hospital. This is a hospital where they specifically are designed to traffic human organs." This is a travesty that is going on in Haiti, our neighbor, not far away, and I imagine that the market is what is driving this. Would you not say?
Yes, correct. It's very, very lucrative. There's a huge demand. North America, Israel, and China are big users of these organs, a big demand for organs. You know, the proximity to, it's a 3-hour flight to Atlanta from Port-au-Prince. So there's a lot of private jets, the borders, the coastline is not secure. There's a lot, it's a narco state, and this all affects children, which is how ICRAFT was kind of born, out of the need to advocate for children, because we're all advocates for children. We all are. There's nobody on this planet that's going to fight harder for their babies, their children, than a mother. I feel like we have so much in common, and we all, injustice for one is an injustice for all, and we all should be helping and supporting these victims. But we've got multiple generation problems. So what I discovered with this man that I had been promoting was that he liked boys. And when I was told this, I said, "He likes boys? Like, what do you mean?" I had no idea. And I was told, yeah, he likes boys. He's been accused in certain cities like Detroit and Boston and Canada. And he stays away from those areas. And I couldn't believe it. And I went back to my office and I Google searched Michael Geilenfeld abuse Haiti. And then bam, there was Mary Kohlhaas's testimony from 1990. There was Karen Davis in the Marymount College incident in 1995, and sprinkled in between there other accusations. So, you know, I like to think of myself as a fair-minded person. You know, if I know Steve extremely well, he's a very straight-laced guy. loves children, really loves children, really cares about children, really wants to make a difference for children in the world, all children. He doesn't distinguish of Maryland children, Delaware children, Georgia children, just all children. He has a vested interest to know that that's our future, right? So if someone came to me and they said, you know, Steve likes boys and not likes them in the biblical sense of liking them, but likes them in an inappropriate way, I would say, you know, I know Steve. Now, come on. I might hear that once, maybe twice because I know Steve, maybe three times because I really know Steve. And I know it would be a lie and just a vicious lie. But 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 times in 30 years, Steve was accused of abusing children, let's say, just hypothetically. I'm sorry, Steve, to use your name in vain. I probably should have picked another example. But the point is, Michael was accused over 10 times in 30 years. And I couldn't believe it. I almost fell over. In fact, I was like visibly sick. I was trying to justify because I thought, wow, Valerie, you know, I like to think of myself as a pretty level-headed, halfway intelligent human being. And I thought, I was trying to justify how I would not have seen this or known about all this. And so I called the woman who had done the testimony in 1990. Her name is Mary Kohlhaas. She's a youth minister in Minnesota. So I was able to Google search her name and I found her because I was saying to myself, self, maybe Mary wanted to had a fight with Michael and maybe it's all fake. I'm going to talk to Mary myself. So I call her, leave her a message, half expecting her not to call me back. And she called me back. She said, Valerie, I get 3, 4, 5 phone calls a month on that. She said, I said, Mary, is it true? She said, every word of my report is true. People still reach out to me of things they've seen at that house, they've heard at the house, things that the boys have reported. And I feel terrible. She said, I'm a lay minister in the Catholic Church, a youth pastor, a youth minister. She said, in 2003, the Catholic Church Vatican did an edict on sex abuse scandal in the Catholic Church. A guy by the name of Archbishop Gregory, he was in Atlanta, Georgia. And he was the Vatican's point person for the sex abuse scandal. And he went around, did all the training. And she said she was at a conference and she went up. This is 2003, 13 years after her report. And she said, I'm so glad that you're doing this. She said, I was at an orphanage and I was made aware of sexual abuse of children in an American's care. And I get calls all the time from new victims saying, please help us. He said, oh my goodness, that's terrible. Send me an email. So she emailed him. To this day, she has never heard a thing back. Well, what's interesting is Archbishop Gregory was just moved last year, a couple of years ago, to Washington, D.C., because the Archbishop of Washington, D.C. had to step down because of his involvement in a sex abuse scandal. It's very disturbing and upsetting. Setting to think that these victims, these brave souls, have stepped forward this many times and no one is helping them. And what I've discovered, Karen, is that a lot of people are involved, the United Nations. There's a lot, it's the largest group of NGOs on the planet. There's a lot of people that have interesting names, justice and democracy and whatever else. And it's anything but justice and democracy. It's hanging out at the Marriott and drinking nice cocktails and talking a bunch of smack and, you know, being on your computer and whatnot. So this is part of the scam, the AIDS scam that showed up to Haiti. And it's not new. It goes back to the 90s. I had an interview recently. I went to Miami and I was interviewed by a Haitian television. And the response from that interview, my phone rings 5, 6, 7 times a day, people calling me. Little old lady, 79-year-old woman in New York called me and she said, Valerie, I'm just so moved by your spirit and what you, this fight. This is 9 years I've been fighting to get this. And by the grace of God, we have an arrest warrant that has led to a red Interpol arrest warrant. That's something.
That is fantastic.
The problem is that this person, Michael Geilenfeld, has been allowed to walk. And so he's running around. So he would be what trafficking people and child advocates would refer to as a repeat offender. He's not going to just wake up miraculously one day and say, you know what, I'm no longer attracted to children. But, you know, Karen, what this brings to mind in my mind's eye is slowly the sands come on a beach. Slowly we have been grooming our population to, it's okay, love trumps hate, right? It's love. 40-year-old man with an 8-year-old boy, it's okay because it's love. Well, it's not okay. It's trauma that affects them the rest of their lives. It's painful. We need to do better by our children, and that's just my experience. And I can tell you a lot that has come to light since I've done this. Several predators have been arrested in Haiti, because Haiti is, it's a hot spot, and they dress like doctors, OBGYNs. They dress like missionaries. They dress like teachers. Pastors are involved in this.
What they're doing is trying to gain the trust of the child so that the child will think that whatever they do is okay because they love them. Is that the message that I'm getting here?
That is partially NAMBLA, North American Man Boy Love Association, which has been in existence since the 80s.
Okay, hold on 1 second. Say that again real slow, because I want our listeners to look that one up.
It's called NAMBLA, North American Man Boy Love Association. And they have been advocating for lowering the age of consent. So in other words, a 40-year-old man that's attracted to an 8-year-old boy, because it's love, it's okay, right?
Is that not what just happened in California when Newsom signed a bill making it okay if an older person has sex with a younger person as long as, quote, it's consensual? How does an 8-year-old give their consent to have sex?
In Haiti, your age of consent is 18. We have different ages of consent in different states because little by little, as I said, this has been worked on for years. There is a priest in Lake Kai named Father Mark Boisvert, and he used to sleep with an 8-year-old boy every night. Everybody knows, the church knows, it's all been reported and everything. And, you know, it's just, I find the song All By Myself. I know all the words by heart. I know every chorus. I know every word that goes into that song. And sometimes, as Steve will tell you, it's very hard to be the torchbearer for this cause. But as I said, we do have a small group of very dedicated and devoted child advocates. And we intend to raise awareness. We intend to do anything that we can to point this out. Because here's the scenario, Karen, that I want you to understand. So, for example, there is a gynecologist who's married with 2 children, and he's in New Bern, North Carolina. So he's a prominent man, right? You respect him, right?
Absolutely.
He goes down to the house, and he's a closet gay. So I guess he would be bisexual. So he stays at the house. There's pastors that go and they're getting their little groove on, and they come back up here, and what they do, it's like kind of like going to the zoo. And, you know, you go to the zoo, you'll see the zebra and the flamingos. You take a bunch of pictures, the hippopotamus. Mm-hmm. You take the pictures and then you post them on your Facebook. Hey, went to the zoo. It's very similar. So what they do is they go down there for this nefarious activity. They paint the wall. They maybe bring some supplies that usually don't make it to the orphans. They go to the market and they're sold. Again, you're not helping Haiti by doing this. They get their fix and they come back up here and they plug back into their little mousy wives and their 2 kids, and the world thinks they're wonderful for being humanitarian, when in fact they victimize these children that are vulnerable. And they exploit the children.
We have about a minute left. What do you want our listeners to do to help you?
Well, the biggest thing that we need is our victims need help, humanitarian help. There are no social services down there. There is a social services. It's called Bien-Être Social. It's IBESR. It's run by a lady by the name of Madame Villadouin. I went to Marco Rubio's office. Steve was with me a couple of years ago, and they told me, Valerie, you're overreacting. Don't worry. We gave $24 million to Bienestar Social to fight trafficking. They're on it. Just lay back. We also gave $30 million to the Dominican Republic because there's a big trafficking problem in the Dominican Republic because there's a lot of refugees. And when you have refugees, you usually don't have your paperwork, and so they're exploiting children. So our victims, at least the victims in our group that has secured the arrest warrant the arrest warrant was issued in October of 15. It's a 10-year warrant. It could be renewed. It led to the Red Interpol arrest warrant. This goes up so high that the U.S. Embassy, when I went down there in 18, told me that that this arrest warrant had expired, which was a lie. Why would they lie?
That's the problem, folks. And that's the problem of voting for people that lie to you. We have to look at the people. We have to look at their actions, not just their words. And we have to investigate. So before we close out this section, Valerie, tell everybody again where they can reach you and give them your number. And thank you.
So our website, I would recommend you go take a look and navigate through that. It's www.icras8.com. And my cell phone number is 678-313-8437. Text me, call me. Most of all, please help me help these victims because they are brave warriors. You hear everything that's wrong in Haiti, but let me tell you something. This group is everything that's right, and they are future leaders because they have said no more. And they've done it bravely at tremendous danger to their lives. I mean, these are very powerful people, right?
Absolutely. So, and everybody, you wanted to know what one person can do, the power of one person. You just heard from two separate people, and they are paying attention and acting, and that's what this is all about. Stay tuned. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
My fellow Americans, you've watched for decades as radical Marxists have systematically taken over some of our nation's most cherished institutions. And like us, we're pretty sure you're not happy about any of it. But this is the America we now find ourselves in. AmericaOutloud.com is fighting back with one of the fastest growing conservative media networks in the world. Features some of the nation's most influential experts and commentators. It is a fight for the soul of humanity. America Out Loud Talk Radio is the voice of liberty and justice for all.
What if a new treatment backed by 17,000 scientific articles was proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance? What would you pay for even the smallest dose of this treatment? Well, the good news is you don't have to pay anything because these are just some of the benefits of a full night of quality sleep. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Until now, most sleep aids haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel invented by the leading nutrition company, Healthy Cell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM Sleep, visit healthycell.com/sleep. That's healthy, CELL.com/sleep.
Hello, this is Lieutenant Randy Sutton, the host of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. I am a 34-year police veteran. I am also the founder and CEO of an organization that stands behind injured and disabled law enforcement officers. It is called The Wounded Blue. Our website is thewoundedblue.org. We have produced a film. It is an important film. I urge you to watch it. The film details what happens when a police officer or law enforcement officer is shot or stabbed or beaten or disabled, seriously injured in the line of duty. Most people think they are taken care of medically and financially. The reality may be quite different. It is called The Wounded Blue, Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. The film is available on Amazon, iTunes, and the Microsoft Store.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Karen Schoen with the Prism of America's Education, and I have a wonderful guest that I am very proud to introduce. She works with me on the Florida Citizens Alliance. She is the communications group manager and has been an asset to the organization. Dominie Clemens, thank you so much for joining me today. Dominie, you are a millennial, and I am very curious to try to figure out how you escaped being indoctrinated into this socialism that so many of our millennials are affected by today.
Well, thank you so much, Karen, for having me on today. That's actually a question that I get pretty often. So I just graduated from Hillsdale College with a degree in economics, and when I was studying up there, very frequently parents would come up to me who were maybe visiting or who learned that I went to Hillsdale, and they would grab me by the shoulders and say, "What can I do to get my kid to go to Hillsdale? How, you know, they've turned against me, or they've become completely indoctrinated by the left." You know, made me think back on why I've been able to kind of learn the truth about things, dig a little bit deeper, think critically, because going to Hillsdale was not in my plan. I went to public school most of my life, which is where a lot of the indoctrination right now, political indoctrination, is going on. I guess before I continue on that, a lot of people ask, what is political indoctrination? And what we tell them with Florida Citizens Alliance is, if you look in 2016, PragerU did a study on how millennials voted. And so when you look at the map of the United States, 18 to 25-year-olds voted with electoral college votes, Democrat 504 to Republican 23 red. And so when you can see that on a map, it's a visual representation of what they're teaching kids in schools. They're not educating them. We actually have really low literacy rates. You know, children aren't able to do math at grade level, especially in Florida. But instead, you look at that, how they're voting, and it's so far one side. And so that's what I mean by indoctrination.
I wanted to ask you, with the indoctrination, were you allowed to hear both sides of the issue, or were you just fed one side of an issue? And that was obviously the side they wanted you to agree with. But did they bring in any opposition at all? Were you taught any opposition at all when you were in public school?
No. They don't really teach it as if it's one side. They do teach it as if it seems to be unbiased. For example, when I was in high school, I went to high school at Gulf Coast High School here in Collier County. It was my U.S. history class, and they were talking about socialism versus capitalism. Seems like they're showing both sides, but their actual definition of those words was incorrect. They were teaching that socialism is fair, socialism provides these different government programs, and it can do this and this. And then they were teaching that, well, capitalism, they were teaching the bad parts of capitalism. So I just looked at that as, okay, this must be true. It seems to be that they're showing both sides. So the only other opinion that I got was from my parents. I was also homeschooled for 1 year, and I went to a private school for 1 year. And when I was homeschooled, I had an amazing history book. I wish I could remember the name. And it went through, you know, it went through so much world history that showed me a very different side. And a lot of it was based on primary sources, which you don't get in the public school. the public school textbooks are mostly just a summarization of what happened in history. So, of course, it's going to be biased because one person is writing or a team of people are writing these textbooks, and they're always slanted one way or another. And a lot of kids don't go home and have that conversation with their parents, which I think is so important that the parents are asking what they're being taught in school, because otherwise they just never hear a different side.
I think this CCP virus was kind of helpful for the education field as parents did get to see what their children were reading, and they did get to see what was going on in school, and now we have an incredible movement regarding homeschool, and that is an absolutely fabulous thing to be happening, because the statistics show that homeschooled students are at least 30% more literate, more in tune with what's going on, and actually have a math background. And I'm so glad that you studied economics, because that's one of the things that I know our students are sorely lacking.
Just to your point that, there have been a bunch of parents that are starting to take their kids out of school because they started the distance learning, and then all of a sudden they can finally see what their kid is learning. When I was in high school, we were not allowed to take our textbooks home. I remember when that happened. It was when Common Core started coming into the schools, and I thought it was strange. But they told us, this way you don't have to carry your books back and forth from home and school and run the risk of leaving it at home. What that did was it alienated our parents. They couldn't see what was actually in the textbooks. And if they try to come into the school and ask, very, very difficult to get past that front desk and just see what's going on in these schools. So parents are finally bringing their kids out, taking their kids out of school, which I think is fantastic. In Collier County, actually, and this is happening all across the United States, 1,700 kids are unaccounted for this school year. So this is just showing parents just aren't putting them back in. So it's very interesting.
Yeah, that's a truly wonderful thing to hear. And parents, please go and look at your students' textbooks, and if you have anything by Pearson, put it in the garbage, because Pearson is a company that is based out of England. England, as we know, is a socialist country to begin with, so their authors are socialists. How do socialists describe American freedom and liberty? They don't, and that's part of the problem. Also, on the Florida Citizens Alliance website, you can go and check your county and see how the scores, how your county is doing in comparison to, well, Florida. But you can go to the U.S. News and World Report and pull down your county in your state and see how your state is doing in educating, because as of this moment, I believe 47% of American students cannot read and write, and that is a travesty, absolute travesty. One of the most important things is learning to read and write math and English, because as you progress in your life, these are the things that will be able to make you a well-rounded person. If you cannot read and write and do simple math, you are constantly relying on somebody else, and that to me is the definition of slavery and socialism. So I think it's absolutely wonderful to teach our children an American education. Dominique, I understand that you spent some time in Portugal. Did that help you to understand what was American government and be able to contrast?
Yes. My family, we moved to Portugal when I was 14 years old, and we lived there for about a little bit more than a year. And it was very forming for me. I mean, as a 14-year-old, that's a very big time, I think, maturing and growing and finally starting to come into a better understanding of my surroundings. That was the year that I was homeschooled, because it was just easier. We actually went there to sing with my dad. He's a professional singer, and so we had so much going on that I was just learning from home, which I think was the best thing that I could have done. A lot of homeschooling is self-learning, so I had to go through the textbooks myself. I had to actually put effort in, because up until that point, a lot of my public school education was very, very easy. I didn't feel like I actually had to apply myself and to think critically about different questions. And so finally I was able to do that But on the other side, living in this country, I didn't fully understand it at the time, but I remember standing in government lines, trying to get all the work visa stuff set up, taking your ticket and sitting there for hours. I was on a volleyball team and had to get a physical. So we went to this doctor's office, and I couldn't believe how outdated it was. It felt like I was in some kind of movie from the 1950s or something weird. It was just dim lighting. Everything was really, really strange looking, and they hooked me up to this whole machine to do a physical. In America, you just kind of walk around, do a few different very simple procedures, and it was very complicated there. It was just a very, very weird experience. And even then,
Dominique,
I had friends.
Dominique, yes. It was free. Isn't that the whole draw?
Yeah.
It was free.
Yes.
So what we're being coached, from what you're saying, is what we're being coached into free means accepting inferior products.
Of course. People always say, oh, Canada has such a better healthcare system. Well, then why are Canadians coming to America to get very serious procedures done or get the best healthcare that they can? When I came back to America, I was a sophomore in high school, and I was in my U.S. history class where they were teaching that socialism is fair and capitalism is bad. And the kid next to me, his family was Russian, but he had never been there. He was, born and raised in America. And I remember him turning to me and saying, Russia is so much better than America. We do things better, and we should just become socialist in America. I just turned to him and started telling him about my experience in Portugal and the bureaucracy and how he really didn't understand what he was talking about. But it's these different ideas. Not many high school students know what they're talking about, but these ideas are being planted, these seeds, and then they go to college, and it's really hammered in. And that is what's scary, is people don't realize that it's starting in K-12 education. They're planting all of those seeds, and then you send them off to a state school or some public university that's teaching them all of this stuff, but 100 times more intensely. So it's really, really important. The number one thing I think that parents need to do is have tough conversations with their kids about going through each subject and talking about what are they learning, what are different viewpoints. That is so important to have that conversation at home, because chances are they aren't learning subjects as a whole. They're really just learning them from one bias.
Well, you have done a lot of work for the Alliance on a new project called the Liberty Scholar. Would you like to explain a little bit about what that is?
Sure. Yes. So I came on board with Florida Citizens Alliance full-time about 4 months ago. And before then, I had interned for about 3 years. So coming on board, one of the biggest projects that I wanted to do, especially because we were starting to see a lot of parents pull their kids out with the coronavirus, was to create a website just for parents. So it's kind of an arm off of Florida Citizens Alliance called libertyscholar.org. And on there, what we've done is we're partnering, and we're still continuously partnering with organizations that already have a really great curriculum, such as Classical Conversations, Freedom Project Academy. These are organizations who have come up with a really good classical Christian curriculum for homeschool families. And what we're trying to do is remarket their materials, but not only homeschool materials, but also extracurricular books, videos on the Constitution, informational articles on child development. And then we also are keeping parents in Florida up to date on the scholarships that are available. We have, number one in school choice here in Florida, so we're trying to keep parents involved and informed, because a lot of parents don't actually know all the different scholarships that are available to them. Basically, Liberty Scholar is just a hub for parents who are interested and involved in education, and on there we're just dumping as much information as we can to help educate them more so that parents can pick the best education for their child, because we believe that one size does not fit all. That's the message that public schools try to send, and we are trying to promote alternatives and kind of customizing your education for your child and your family.
Well, that is absolutely wonderful. And this is a resource that any parent can use. Again, you don't have to be in Florida to use the resources on the Alliance, Florida Citizens Alliance website. They are applicable to any state and can be the most valuable when you're homeschooling your children. It is so important, as you can see from listening to Dominique. Dominique, we are going to run out of time, and we have a topic that I want to discuss in full. So I'm going to ask you if you can come back next time, because I'm going to whet everybody's appetite. One of the most underreported problems that we have with our young people are trafficking, and this is something that is not being addressed. You can go on any website, at any news site, at any given time, and you would be hard-pressed to find an article that has anything to do with trafficking. So I'm going to ask you, Dominique, if you would come back again next time and give us your report on what you have discovered regarding trafficking and pornography in school. Would that be okay with you?
Yes, of course.
Well, thank you. And thank you all for listening. This has been Karen Schoen, and you have been listening to the Prism of America's Education. We are brought to you on America Out Loud Talk Radio Network every Saturday and Sunday at 9 a.m. Eastern and at 5 p.m. Eastern. Thank you all, and have a wonderful week. See you again next week. But,